Our study of Mishnayos Bikurim should ready us for the Chag HaBikurim. As I said last week, every year on Shavuos night when I was growing up, and unfortunately I was too young to appreciate what my father was teaching me, every year on Shavuos night my father would sit down and learn Mishnayos Bikurim with us. And I was too young to pay attention, and I never did, unfortunately. So I had to do it the hard way. So this whole week I was trying to figure out what am I going to say as we learn Bikurim. So hopefully it will be something of interest. Just by way of introduction, we have a medrash in the very beginning of Parshas Bereishis, Sefer Bereishis, where the medrash tells us Bereishis bara Elokim, and the medrash goes through a whole list of reasons why the Ribono Shel Olam created the world. Bereishis bara Elokim b'shvil Yisrael shenikareishis, or b'shvil Torah shenikareishis, which means makes a lot of sense. The world was created because in one period in history, there's going to be a Jewish people, and the world was worth creating for them. Or because, at one period in history, we were going to be given the Torah, and the world was worth being created just for the Torah itself, or just for the sake of the Jewish people. But here the Medrash says something striking. Look at number Aleph, the Medrash tells us, Bereishis bara Elokim, bizchus habikurim, shenemar Bereishis bara Elokim, vein reishis ele bikurim, as we learn, reishis bikuri ad mascha. So this is a very striking statement, because it doesn't seem to fit in. Bishvil Torah Shenikra Reishis makes sense. Bishvil Yisrael Shenikra Reishis makes a lot of sense. But Bishvil Bikurim Shenikra Reishis, this is a reason for the world to have been created. This is one of the most fundamental mitzvahs. What's so important about Bikurim? So that's a very surprising statement that the Mishnah has. If you look a little bit further, I think the answer is very obvious. In our Mikra Bikurim, one thing that we do as we go to the Beis HaMikdash, as we bring our Bikurim to the Beis HaMikdash, one of the things that we say is Va'ata Hinehe Vesi Reishis Priha Adama Asher Nasata Li Hashem. We profess before God, and we submit ourselves to Him, and we say, we recognize that everything You have given to us is an absolute bracha, is a blessing. There is nothing in our lives that should be taken for granted. There is nothing in our lives that we are deserving of. And therefore, we submit ourselves to the Ribono Shel Olam on the Chag HaBikurim. When we offer HaBikurim, we submit ourselves to Him, and we say, thank You for everything You have given us in our lives, and we recognize that it is all in Your great kindness that we have life and that we enjoy the lives that we live. So this is the reason why Bikurim, Bishvil Yisrael Shenikra Reishis makes sense, Bishvil Torah Shenikra Reishis makes sense, but the world was worth being created just for the sake of the Bikurim alone. Why? Because that gives us the opportunity to express our gratitude to the Ribono Shel Olam and recognize that everything in our lives is only B'chazdei Elyon. You look in the Ramban, in the end of Parshas Bo, very famous words of the Ramban, but he says, Kavanas kol ha-mitzvos. If you want to know what all the mitzvos boil down to, what is the bottom line of everything that we do throughout our existence, Shenamin ve'elokeinu. Number one, we have to believe in God. If you don't believe in God, then why are you doing any mitzvos? God's the one who commanded us to do the mitzvos, and obviously if you don't believe in Him, there's no reason to be performing anything. But not only that, says the Ramban, secondly is, V'noda elav shehu baranu. Once you recognize His presence, once you understand that God is the one who put you in this world and you're here for a purpose, number two, says the Ramban, is Vinoda Elav Shehu Barana. We have to offer a debt of gratitude to Him for creating us. Vihi Kavanas Hayitzira. That was the intention of our creation. That's the reason why we're here. She'ein lanu tam acher b'yitzira harishona. Ve'ein kel elyon chafetz b'tachtonim. God is not interested. What do you think? He needs your tefillin? You think He needs your talis? You think He needs your tzitzis? He doesn't need it. He gives us mitzvahs and He asks us to perform them. But ein el elyon chafitz betachton milvad sheyeda haadam viyoda leelokav shabara. What is the reason why we have all these mitzvahs? Says the Ramban, if it all boils down to one thing, that one thing is that He wants us to recognize throughout our experience of the year, of the day, that He is a presence in our life, that He is a force in our life, and because of that, we owe Him a great debt of gratitude. And this is why, says the Ramban, we were created. This is why we're here. In order that we should have those opportunities all throughout our day, all throughout our year. And perhaps this is what the Medrash means. Bishvil habikurim shenikra reishis. Bikurim is so fundamental because that is the reason we really were created. And as the Medrash says, this is the reason why the world is worth being created in the first place. The Targum Yonasim and Uziel writes on the Pasuk, Yehuda ata yoducha achecha. So what exactly does that mean? So the Targum Yonasim ben Uziel writes that Ata Yoducha Achecha means, if I'm from the Shevet of Reuven, I should really be known as the Reuvenim. If I'm from the Shevet Shimon, I should go down in history as from the Shimonim. But yet, the Targum Yonasim ben Uziel says, Ata Yoducha Achecha, the bracha that was given to Yehuda was that no, all of the Jewish people are going to go down in history as the Yehudim, even though we're not all from Shevet Yehuda. And why is that? It's very strange. We're not from Shevet Yehuda. Why do we go down in history as being somewhat a part of Shevet Yehuda. Why are we referred to as the Yehudim? And the answer, I believe, is that Yehuda is all about Hodah, and this is what we are all about. This is the foundation of our people. We go down in history not as the Reuvenim, not as the Shimonim, because it's not important. What's important is that we are the Yehudim. We are the people who always make sure to show our gratitude, to always submit ourselves, to show the Ribbono Shel Olam how much we owe Him. In Nishmas, every Shabbos, every Yom Tov, we say, Shekein Chovas Kol HaYitzurim. The obligation of every living person on this world is, Lefanecha, before you God, what is our obligation? Lahodos, Lahalel, Lefar, Leromim, Lahadil, Levarech, La'ali, Lekalis. It is our obligation. That's what we're here for. That's what we're supposed to be working on in life, to show the Ribbono Shel Olam that we appreciate everything that He does for us, big and small, and to understand that all of it is an absolute blessing and nothing is because of what we are deserving. And therefore, when we come to the study of Bikurim, I think it's important to have this little backdrop in mind that Bikurim is not something that's just another mitzvah. It's not just talus, it's not just tefillin, it's not even Shabbos, it's more than that. It's because this is something that is so fundamental to everything we believe in. It's our opportunity to think about appreciation, about Hakaras HaTov, and about everything that we are supposed to be giving back to the Ribbono Shel Olam for the blessings that He bestows upon us throughout our lives. So when we talk about the mitzvah of Bikurim, with that short introduction out of the way, so to speak, let's get into the halacha. So we talk about Bikurim just by way of understanding what it is that we're going to be talking about. There are four parts to the mitzvah of Bikurim. The four parts of the mitzvah are, number one, most obviously, the mitzvah of Hafrasha. You have to first separate the Reishis Pri HaAdamah. You have to first take apart that which were the first fruits that grew, as the Pasuk says, V'lakachta Mereishis Pri HaAdamah. So that's obviously the first thing that needs to be spoken about. The Ramban on Chumash says that part of that mitzvah of separating is not just to separate it and realize and recognize, have a pile, but the Ramban says you have to be korishem on it. That's also part of the mitzvah of separating, is to say, Hareza Bikurim. This is now designated as the Bikurim. Not just am I going to put it aside, but I have to call it a name, be korishem, and say, this is designated for that purpose, and now it has the Kedusha, it has the status of the Bikurim. That's phase number one of the mitzvah. Phase number two is to bring it up to Yerushalayim, as the Pasuk says in the end of Parshas Mishpatim, Reishis Bikuri Yad Mascha Tavi Beis Hashem Elokecha. Lo Sevasho Gediba Chalei Vimo. And that's the question, what does one have to do with the other? Maybe we'll get to that next week. Whether there is some connection. Tosas and Baba Basra Daf Pei Aleph says there might be some sort of connection between Tavi Beis Hashem Elokecha by the mitzvah Bikurim to bring the Bikurim up to Yerushalayim and the Yisra of Basra B'Chalav, which seem to have no connection whatsoever, but maybe we'll see in the coming weeks what the connection might be. So that is phase two of the mitzvah. Number one, I've separated it. I've, like the Ramban said, be korishem, I've designated it for that purpose. Now, number two, I have to bring it up to Yerushalayim. Once I get to Yerushalayim, the Pasuk in Parshas Naso tells us, you now have an obligation to give it, to present it to the Kohen. It's going to be his. And that is learned from the Pasuk that tells us, V'chal tshuma l'chal kodshi b'nei Yisrael asher yakrivu l'kohen lo yihyeh. Rashi on the spot in Parshas Naso tells us that is not referring to tshuma as I would have thought, but rather Rashi says what it's discussing in that Pasuk is the offering of Bikurim. So you have this farmer, brings his Bikurim, designates it, sets it aside, Koreshem, brings it up to Yerushalayim, presents it to the Kohen. And finally, we have the mitzvah in Parshas Kisava, which is the Kriyas Parshas Bikurim. We have to read all the psukim, as the Pasuk says, Va'anisa va'amarta lefnei Hashem Elokecha, Arami Avidavi, all the psukim that we're familiar with from the Haggadah Shel Pesach are really the psukim that are stated in the Mikra Bikurim, which we'll get to in further detail. Everybody agrees, that this fourth phase of the mitzvah of the Kriyas HaParsha of the Mikra Bikurim, when I go up to the Beis HaMikdash and I present it, and then I say the words, Va'anisa va'amarta, everyone agrees, the Rambam and all the Monei HaMitzvahs agree, that's a separate mitzvah. So you have number one, the mitzvah of Bikurim, then you have number two, a totally separate mitzvah. The Rambam in the Minyan HaMitzvahs tries to figure out what the count is of Taryag Mitzvahs. And the Ramban questions the assumption in the first place. Why is everyone assuming that there are 613 mitzvahs? Where did we get this magic number of 613? Who said that that's true? Just because we have an Agadah to Gemara that says somewhere 613, but who said that's the case? And therefore the Ramban questions the premise in the first place that who said 613 is the magic number. But the working assumption of most of the Rishonim is that 613 is the working number, and they have to figure out what is going to be considered in part of the 613 and what is subsumed under another mitzvah. So over here, all the Monei HaMitzvahs agree that Kriyas Parshas HaBikurim, reading the psukim when you get to the Beis HaMikdash and present your Bikurim to the Kohen, everyone agrees that's a separate mitzvah. The subject of debate is, what about the other three stages? As we said, stage number one is being mafresh the Bikurim, designating it, setting it aside. Stage two is bringing it up to Yerushalayim. Stage three is giving it to the Kohen. Are those considered one mitzvah, or are they considered separate mitzvahs? The Rambam and the Sefer HaMitzvahs, Mitzvah Asay, Kuf Chafei.
Is the fourth part taloy on the other three? In other words, if you don't end up bringing it up to
Yerushalayim. No. So, the question is, what if I don't end up bringing frus to Yerushalayim? Should I go to the Beis HaMikdash and just say the psukim? Obviously, what?
You don't own land.
No, but let's say I do own land. Let's say I own land and it happened to be a flood this year and nothing's growing and I don't end up bringing the fruits. Is there any reason to go to the Beis HaMikdash and just read the psukim at all? The answer to that is absolutely not. So it is counted as a separate mitzvah, but obviously it's connected to the mitzvah of the Bikurim itself. Let's just get through this point and then we'll get to a question. So what's the point of debate? The Rambam and the Reb Sadia go, and I'm sorry, have a disagreement as to whether we should count this as two separate mitzvahs or as one mitzvah. The Rambam seems to say that it's two separate mitzvahs. Number one, lahotzi abikurim, to be mafresh, to set aside, to designate as one mitzvah. Number two, says the Rambam, to bring them to Yerushalayim and then to give it to the kohen. That's all part of mitzvah number two. So the Rambam counts here three mitzvahs. Mitzvah one is designate, set aside. Number two, go to Yerushalayim, give it to the kohen. Number three mitzvah is read the parsha as you're presenting it to the kohen. That's the Rambam's opinion. Rav Sadia Gaon disagrees with the Rambam, and he feels that no, that parsha, that Hafrashas Bikurim is considered one mitzvah. Havas HaBikurim to the Beis HaMikdash is another mitzvah. And where do we draw the line? When do we say, I'm sorry, the Rambam is of the opinion that it's all subsumed under one. Excuse me, I'm sorry. The Rambam says it's all one, and Rav Sadia Gaon is of the opinion that it's considered two separate mitzvahs. You're asked to do two different things. Yes, they might be part of a larger whole, but you're asked to be doing two very different things. Question.
Yeah,
so that's what we'll get to in Mishnah later on in the first parak. We'll see that in, hopefully, next week. We'll get to that. So now let's go straight into the Mishnah. For those who have Mishnayis, please join us. For those who don't, maybe you can look on with somebody else. Everybody good? Or you can pull up on your phones. Easier. What a great world we live in. So let's read. Mishnayis Bikurim, I'm sorry. For next week, should I just put it on here? Would that make it easier for everybody? Just include it? Okay. So let's see, the first Mishnah, Yesh Mevi'im Bikurim Bikurim. Now that we know that there are many different phases, many different parts to the mitzvah of bringing Bikurim, part number one is designating, part number two is going to Yerushalayim, part number three is giving to the kohen, part number four is reading the psukim. Well, is everyone included in everything? Which really gets to Ari's question, meaning what if I can only do one part without the other? Does that disqualify me from everything? So I think everybody would agree that if I can only do the Kriyas HaPsukim without doing the Bikurim being brought to the Beis HaMikdash, obviously I'm out. That's not a question at all. However, the question is over here, maybe there are some people that will bring Bikurim, but for whatever reason, will not be able to recite the Psukim. Or maybe there are some people who are farmers, they have a lot of trees growing, they have a lot of fruit that's growing, but for some reason, they are exempt from the mitzvah of Bikurim. So let's see, the first Mishnah says as follows. Yesh Mevi'im Bikurim Bikurim. There are those who are able to fulfill the mitzvah Behidura, you can do the mitzvah from top to bottom, from beginning to end. You can pluck the bikurim, bring them to the Beis HaMikdash, give them to the kohen, and read the parsha. You're the best one. There are other people who are mevi'im v'lo korim. There are other people who, for whatever reason, as we'll see, they bring everything to the Beis HaMikdash, but they do not recite the psukim. And then we have yeshe mevi'im. There are some people who are totally out of the picture. They do not bring bikurim to the Beis HaMikdash at all, and obviously they do not recite the psukim either. So the first list that the Mishnah is going to discuss is those who are ein mevi'im at all. Those who do not bring bikurim at all. Number one, elu she'ein mevi'im. These are the ones who do not bring the bikurim. Who are those? For example, hanotel atoch shalom, if I grow a tree in my own backyard, in my own vineyard. V'hivrich atoch shal yachid o shal rabim. Hivrich means you, what's the English word for that? What? What do you say?
Bend.
This is a better word than that. Leans? What? Basically, I take parts of the tree and I put it back into the ground, and now it's going to grow. It's going to sprout again out of the other side, right? So I have a tree that's growing wonderful. Then I take one of the branches and I mavrich it. I bend it into the ground that it should grow in either the toch shal yachid into my neighbor's property or the toch shal rabim into the street. V'chein hamavrich mitoch shal yachid o mitoch shal rabim mitoch shalo. Or look, I don't have enough money to buy my own tree, to have my own gardener, so what am I going to do? I have a very beautiful tree on the next-door neighbor's garden, so I'll just ask him. I'll take one of his branches, and I'll put it into my property, and now I'll have a tree that's going to grow for mine. Or for that matter, I don't want to get involved with my neighbor, so I'm just going to go to the street, I have a beautiful tree growing in the Rishus HaRabim right near my house. I'm going to go and take one of those branches, push it into my chatzer, push it into my field. Now, after a couple of years, it's going to grow very beautifully in my field. So anyone who's in that category, we assume, does not bring Bikurim, even if it grows beautiful fruits. Or if you have somebody who grows, you're an honest erlich person, you have your own tree, your own gardener, you plant your own things, so you plant in your own field. And I bend over the tree that it should grow another tree in another one of my fields. So I have field A over here, field B over here. I plant a tree in field A. Now I want field A's tree to also grow in field B. How do I do that? I'm going to go and put one of the branches way beneath the ground to the point that it's going to reach field number B, field B. And that's the way we're going to have another tree growing in my second field. However, in between, derech hayachad v'derech harabim miyamsa. Unfortunately, I have something going in between my two properties. I have field A over here, field B over there. And in between, I have a thoroughfare. In between, I have my next door neighbor has a field. So I don't want to bother him. I don't want to get in his way. Of course, I'm never going to steal from him. But what I'm going to do is, I'm going to put my branch underneath his property. Of course, he doesn't mind. Why would he care? It's underneath his property. And then it's going to sprout forth in the new property, which is also mine. So you would say, everything's kadasa kadin. What did I do wrong? I own the tree, I own the plant, I own everything, and I push it into my own property, which is field B. What's wrong with that? So let's see. The Mishnah says, everyone in this category does not bring Bikurim. Hareze eino mevi. Rabbi Huda disagrees with that last case, and he says, what do you mean? That's not the same as case A and case B that the Mishnah said again. Mishnah has three cases. Case one is, I steal a tree from Rishus HaRabim and push it into my property. Or I take from my neighbor and I push it into my property. Obviously, that's not yours, so you don't bring Bikurim. Case number three, Rabbi Huda argues, he says, what do you mean? The tree belongs to you, the field belongs to you, everything's yours. So what if above your property you happen to have somebody else who owns a property? What's the difference? It still belongs to you. The tree is in my property. The new tree that's sprouting out is also in my property. So what's the problem? So the Mishnah says, Rabbi Huda disagrees on that last point. Then the next Mishnah picks up and says, Me'ezo ta'amena mevi. Why is this the case that you shouldn't bring Bikurim in that last case? Or for that matter, in the first two cases also. What did I do wrong in the last case? Says the Mishnah as follows, Mishum shenemar, because the Pasuk says, Reishis bikuri ad mascha. From the fact that it says, bikuri ad mascha, your adama, your land, we learn from there an extra special halacha, ad shiyuhu kol hagidulin me ad masecha. So we learn from there an extra special halacha, and we'll get back to the rest of the Mishnah later on, but let's stop there. That's basically a stopping point for the first set of halachas in the Mishnah, which means we have a special halacha of ad mascha, that all of the sustenance, all of the nutrients, the growth, and everywhere where it gets sustenance from, needs to be from ad mascha, needs to be from your land, from your ground, has to belong to you, and therefore, if you have a case like this, where you have a tree in field A that now is growing in field B, but on top of it, it's gaining nutrients and sustenance from somewhere else in between that doesn't belong to you, either Rishus HaRabim, where nobody cares, or Rishus HaYachad, where nobody cares. Still, we assume it's not gaining complete sustenance, Me Ad Mascha, and therefore we assume that that would not be qualifying for the mitzvah of Bikurim to be done on it. Now, there's a very fascinating Gemara. It's worth mentioning, because over here we see a very great focus on Ad Mascha. It has to be your land. We call it, the payers have to come from my land. We also find in the Kriyas HaPsukim, when you recite everything in the Beis HaMikdash, as we'll see in the coming Prakim, as you recite everything, one of the Psukim that you say is, Hine Hevesi Reishis Pri HaAdama. I have brought the beginning of the crops of my Adama. Now the Gemara in Brachas Daf Mem has a discussion about the following. What happens? What's the halacha? Let's look at the Gemara together. Birech HaPera Se'ilan Bari Pri HaAdama. What's the halacha? If I have a fruit, I'm supposed to make a bari priha eitz. If I have a vegetable, I'm supposed to make bari priha adama. Ask the Gemara, what happens if I make a mistake? Birech al peiros ha'ilam. Let's say I have an apple in my hand, and I mistakenly make the bracha bari priha adama. So the Gemara says yatza. Why? The tree grows from the ground. However, what if I did it the other way? What would you say? What if I make a bracha on a vegetable? I have a cucumber in my hand, and instead of making a bari priya adama, I now make a bari priya eitz? Lo yatza. Why not?
Because the ground does not grow from the tree.
Correct. So the ground doesn't grow from the tree, but the tree grows from the ground. So therefore we assume, if I make a bari priya adama, that's all inclusive. That includes even the apple that I'm holding, and therefore we assume it's okay. Ask the Gemara a question. Man tana de ikar ilan ara. Yes, what you said is correct, that a tree grows from the ground, but Who are we quoting here that assumes that a tree's sustenance is really from the ground and not from the tree itself? Says the Gemara, Amar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak Rabbi Yehuda hi. This is really following the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Why? What does Rabbi Yehuda say? Titnan, Yave Shamayon or Nikza Sa'ilan, Mevi Ve'eno Kori. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Mevi Ve'kori. Take the following scenario. I have a beautiful tree growing in my backyard. I have the Bikurim are growing first fruits of the crop. And now I pluck them off the tree. I'm ready to go to the Beis HaMikdash. Before that happens, Hurricane Sandy, my whole field gets destroyed, everything's gone, and there's no tree left anymore. The tree is gone. There's a hurricane, the tree falls out of the ground. Now I'm going to go to the Beis HaMikdash. Does it make any sense? I have the fruits, I made sure to save those, but my whole tree is knocked down. So that's a discussion in the Gemara. Can I really go to the Beis HaMikdash and say with a straight face, Hine hevesi, I have brought, Mereshis priha adama, what do you mean, but your land is no longer intact. Your tree is not there. So how can you say, these are the fruits of my Adama that's no longer? So that's a subject of debate. Do you bring Bikurim in such a case to the Beis HaMikdash and say the Psukim? Or do we say, you can bring the Bikurim, but you can't say the Psukim with a straight face because your tree is no longer there? So Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion, well, your tree is no longer there, but the ground is still there. Nothing happened to the ground. Yeah, the tree may have gotten knocked down, but the ground is still here. So you can still say the psukim that I have brought my peiros from my adama because, after all, the tree gains all of its nutrients and sustenance from the ground itself. And as long as the ground is still there, which nobody can ever get rid of the ground, you can still say the pasuk of reishis pri ha-adama. The Rabbanan are of the opinion that no. Bottom line, the tree, yes, it gains some nutrients from the ground, but in the end of the day, the tree itself is self-sustaining, I guess they were of the opinion. And therefore they say, you can bring the Bikurim, but you cannot say the Psukim when you get to the Beis HaMikdash because your ground does not exist. How do we paskin? So one second. So what does the Gemara want to prove from there? If you hold like Rabbi Yehuda that the tree gains its nutrients from the ground, then it makes sense that if you make a Bari Priya Adama on a Bari Priya Eitz, right, on an apple, that you'll be Yotze, because after all, the apple really grows from the ground. That's what the Gemara is assuming. The problem is that the Rambam splits the Psak. The Rambam says, with regard to the brachos, if you make a Bari Priya Adam instead of a Bari Priya Eitz, you're Yotzeh. Which means to assume that the tree's sustenance comes from the ground. Yet when it comes to the Halacha Bikurim, the Rambam paskens the other way. That if you plucked off your Bikurim, and now by the time you get to the Beis HaMikdash, there was a hurricane, and your whole tree fell down, and it's not there anymore, you're Mevi Ve'eno Kori. You cannot recite the Psukim. What does that mean? Why? Doesn't the Gemara say that it's Tali Zebazeh? If you assume that everything that grows on a tree really has sustenance from the ground, then that should follow that by the Bikurim it should be the same. So this is a major problem in the Rambam. How do you understand it? So my father never gets caught up with these kinds of problems. My father always tells me that whenever you have a Shvar Rambam, it's probably Yerushalmi. Okay? So the Rambam found the Yerushalmi, and certainly when we're talking about Bikurim, there's a lot of Yerushalmi on Bikurim, so the Rambam probably found the Yerushalmi. The truth is, over here, my father's right. Because the Kesem Mishnah, Lechem Mishnah, and others are trying to figure out, is that really what the Yerushalmi meant? This is not what the Yerushalmi meant. A lot of times that's the Rambam, it's the problem with the Rambam, that he doesn't give us the sources of where he gets his halacha, but the Yerushalmi must get involved here. So it's a problematic Rambam. You have to figure out what it's all about. I did see yesterday that Panim Yafos has, in his commentary on Chumash, Panim Yafos is the Hafla. He was a great Torah giant. He has amazing Svarim and Nashim Nezikin. But here he has a Panim Yafos on Chumash. The Hafla wrote a Sefer on Chumash as well. And here he gives what's a fascinating idea. It's against the whole Gemara, but I think it's fascinating nonetheless. Says the Panim Yafos, why is it that we paskin, even though the Rambam disregards the other halacha regarding Bikurim, which would seem to indicate that the Rambam feels that when you have a fruit that's growing on a tree, it really does not connect back to the ground. So then why does the Rambam say that if you make a bracha, bari pri ha'adam, on an apple, that you're mekayim your mitzvah, that you're yotzei the bracha, why should that be the case? Doesn't follow. Says the Panim Yafos as follows. Let's read what he says. Hine, mizeh raya mufureshes, mimashikasa b'masnisim b'perakeitzim nevarchim. From here, from this pasuk, by mikra bikurim, you see a raya to the halacha of making the bracha on bari pri ha'adam, on the bari pri ha'etz. Somebody who brings Bikurim from his grapes or from his pomegranates or from his dates, what does he say? Haya Omer, how can you say Mireishis Priha Adama? What do you mean? You don't have wheat and barley, it didn't grow on the ground. Says the Panim Yafos, what you see clearly is that the Torah itself calls something that grows on a tree Adama. And therefore he says, when it comes to a bracha, the same would be the case. When it comes to a bracha, if you're holding an apple in your hand, you make a bari pri adama, you're mekayim the mitzvah. That's the bracha, that's fine, that's no problem. So he has a genius answer to explain why this should be true. It's not what the Gemara says. The Gemara seems to say it's tali sebezet. The Gemara says it has to do with bikurim, it has to do with whether or not it gets sustenance. However, he just brings a simple proof from the pasuk. And from here, from this first Mishnah, you see that Adama is something that we take very seriously. Reishis bikuri ad mascha means it has to be my property, it has to belong to me every bit of the way, and therefore we assume that some things would be disqualified because they are not growing solely from your ground. But I think a side halacha that's very interesting that comes out of it is, regarding that bracha on the apple, would you be able to be mekayim your mitzvah of making a bracha by making a bari pri adama instead of a bari pri eitz? That comes directly from the terminology that we find over here by pri adama. Let's just try to finish because I want everyone to get to Marv at 10 o'clock. Those that didn't daven. So I just want to make two more quick points, and that is the following. Our Mishnah, if you look carefully, says the reason why, if you have any of these cases where the tree doesn't grow solely from your property, that you cannot bring the Bikurim and read the Parsha, is because it's a lack of Bikuri Ad Mascha. It's not totally your land. However, the Yerushalmi says something which is very strange. The Yerushalmi tells us that the only time that we assume that if you take a tree of Rishus HaRabim and mavrich it into your property, that you wouldn't be able to bring the Bikurim is if you did it Shalo Rishus. However, let's say you do it Rishus, you go to the municipality, you go to the mayor of the town, and you ask him, look, I'm a poor man, I don't have any trees, I would love to have some gardening, but I can't afford it. Can I take one of the trees from Rishus HaRabim and just bend over a branch and have it grow on my property? You're not going to lose anything, what do you mind? He says, of course, Shechter, what's the problem? I understand, you know, what's the problem? So I got permission, or from my neighbor, I go and I ask him, Rishus, can I take one of the branches from your property? Yerushalmi says, no problem. Now that's very hard to understand, because if the reason why is because it's not Ad Mascha, it doesn't belong to me, what does it matter if I get Rishus? It doesn't become mine. It still belongs to the municipality, just they gave me permission to make use of it. It doesn't become mine. It doesn't transfer the ownership. So how is that going to be Ad Mascha? And this is a major problem. How do we understand why this Yerushalmi should be true? Why should that be the case, that if I ask permission, if I ask Rishus, then all of a sudden it becomes okay and I would be allowed to bring Bikurim from that? So the truth is, if you look further on in the Yerushalmi and Bikurim, the Yerushalmi says there's a disagreement between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yochanan as to what the primary reason for all of these cases is. So our Mishnah tells us what the reason is. Our Mishnah says because it's not Ad Mascha. And that gets into all discussion whether we can call Bikurim Adama or it's only Ha'etz. That's the discussion that we just had. The Yerushalmi says there's another interpretation. Perhaps the reason why I'm not allowed to is because it's Gezel. It's because it's Gezel. Not because it's not gaining nutrients and sustenance from only my land, it's gaining from other places. What do you care? Bottom line, if it's growing in your property and belongs to you and you're the rightful owner, go ahead, bring the Bikurim. What's the problem? Why do you need hyper, super, Ad Mascha? I cannot gain nutrients from anybody else's field. What's the big deal? And what if somebody else comes along and puts fertilizer on my field and helps my tree grow? Also, I'm not allowed to bring? So Yerushalmi says it's insignificant. What does that mean? As long as it grows in your field and everybody knows you're the rightful owner, of course you're allowed to do it. Says the Yerushalmi, perhaps the reason for our Mishnah is because you did it all Shalom Rishus. And you're a gazlan. You stole. And if you steal something, of course you're not allowed to bring it for Bikurim. It's not yours. It doesn't belong to you. So perhaps that's the reason why our Mishnah says over here all these cases would be disqualified for the bringing of Bikurim. Because after all, not that it's a lack of Ad Mascha like our Mishnah says, the simple understanding, but rather because it's gzela, it's stolen, which will get us straight into the next discussion that we'll have next week in Meretz Hashem, if people are interested in coming back, we'll see, which is all about gzela and mitzvah baba aveira. We'll talk about that in Meretz Hashem next week. Maybe we'll stop here so people can make it on time for Maariv.